Back together again, you and I chatting on Tuesday, November the 28th, 2023 on Connecticut Today with a closer look at the next phase in the battle over internal combustion engine vehicle sales in the state. We also chatted with Republican State Senator Paul Ciccarella. He's a member of the State Regulations Review Committee. We talked to Stonington First Selectwoman Danielle Cheesbro, who was reelected this year as a member of the Forward Party. We spent a few minutes with Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio. All right, everybody needs to just calm down, take it easy. Everybody who's upset about the governor pulling the proposal off the table yesterday to mandate that internal combustion engine vehicles can't be sold or have to be phased out pretty much in Connecticut by 2035, the fact that it's not going to go forward, everybody just calm down. I mean, I'm reading stuff here starting late yesterday and into today that makes it sound like it's the end of the freaking world. It's not. Relax. Nobody dropped a thermonuclear warhead on Connecticut. Okay? Relax. The sun is shining. It's a little cold out there. Life is good. The U.S. is still a great country to operate and live and work in. Oh, no, it's not, Paul. Yes, it is, you idiot. That's why millions of people try to come here and cross the border every year. But I digress. My God, some of the stuff I'm reading, and we will figure this out. You know what yesterday was before I get to some of the dumb quotes I've heard and read about over the past day or so? You know what yesterday was about? You know, there's that old phrase, and I think this is it. It's like five words. You can't fight City Hall, right? You can't fight City Hall, right? Five, City Hall maybe is two words, one word. I don't know. The caffeine hasn't kicked in yet. But you know that old phrase, you can't fight City Hall? Well, maybe you can. Maybe now, because we're in the world of talk radio, thank you. I like to think that, you know, hosts all around the state, not just me, but hosts in New Haven and Hartford and others on this radio station and talk radio hosts also in other parts of the state out east and others, you know, maybe we should take a little bit of a victory lap, but we only try to keep you folks, you know, in tune with what's going on here. But, you know, that whole thing, you can't fight City Hall, that's not true anymore. With the power of talk radio, with the power of the internet, with the power of social media, this is changing almost every day. And to see this happen yesterday with this proposal that would have... And let's remind people of something here. Let's remind people of something here. A lot of these people just whose heads are cracking, whose heads need to be bound in duct tape before they all drop here out of some, you know, liberal or progressive screen they're doing here. Understand... Yeah, all the Republicans voted no. It's a 7-7, the Regulations Review Committee. So the way that city is coming, the way that committee, rather, is set up, is that if it ended up 7-7, it would these regulations would have gone into effect. You know who was going to kill the regulations? The Democrats were. Not the Republicans. All these Republicans, they hate the environment. No, it was people. It was people of the ruling, of the majority party in Hartford. Namely, I guess, Kathy Austin from out in the east, eastern part of the state. She said she was looking out for her constituents, who a lot of farmers out there, I guess, who say, hey, you know, this battery-powered farm equipment thing is not going to work okay. And Joan Hartley in Waterbury as well. No surprise. She tends to tack to the middle or even slightly right, even though she is a Democrat. So who's to blame here? But some of the stuff I'm reading here, it makes my hair hurt. Whatever's left of that. I mean, my God. Listen to this. This is from a story in the Connecticut Mirror. There's a comment here, and I don't know this gentleman. I'm sure he's a fine gentleman, but I want to comment on what he said. Charles Rothenberger, a climate and energy lawyer with the environmental group Save the Sound, said Monday he found it, quote, difficult, if not impossible, to make any logical sense of it, unquote, of the failure to adopt the regulations. You talk about condescending and pedantic here. Let me continue here. Quote, it's really an embarrassment all the way around when it comes to this, so Rothenberger said. If, in fact, the committee is not voting on these regulations tomorrow, and they're not, it is really unconscionable, unquote. Ooh. He said, quote, we are walking away from our longtime partners in the effort to clean up our air and protect our public health in terms of Massachusetts, in New York, and Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. Now, here comes the icing on the cake, because again, I can't stress this enough, even though it was two Democrats that killed this, right? D versus R, blue versus red, even though there were two Democrats, read along with me, Democrats, three syllables. Even though it was two Democrats that effectively said, I can't do this, we have to rework this, which is fine. Something is going to get reworked here. We're not going to walk away from this. Here's what this gentleman, Mr. Rothenberger, said. Quote, and we are declaring that we are content to align ourselves with the standards that are good enough for Alabama and Mississippi and West Virginia. And those are the states that we want to stand. So it's, you know, it boggles my mind. Oh, my God, stop it. My God, can you be any more condescending? We're going with standards that are good enough for Alabama and Mississippi and West Virginia. I guess that's that northeastern arrogance that says, oh, the other states don't count. My God, they can be so stinking arrogant sometimes, people on the left. And those are the states that we want to stand, it boggles my mind. Stop. They're going to figure something out here. It is just, the sky is not falling. Now, they're talking about there have been aspects of this, what's going to happen. Well, I'm going to sit back and watch this, because I'll tell you something, and I know the legislative leaders are saying this already. We heard this bubbling up before yesterday, even into last week. I wasn't here live, but I was reading. I'm saying, they're getting a little squeamish on this one. They're going to pull out of this, I can tell you. And then Monday we heard more rumblings, and then what happened yesterday. So this is going to be interesting now. You have Matt Ritter, the House Speaker, and some other Democrats saying, well, we're just going to have to deal with this on a vote. Okay. I'll believe that when I see it. Am I saying there are people in Hartford, particularly the majority party, that are trying to soft shoe this a little bit and dance around it? Yeah, I am. Because you know what happens next year? Once we turn the corner and we get into 2024 and we have another legislative session, oh, it's an election year. And I'm telling you, maybe I'm going to be wrong here, and I will wholeheartedly come on this radio station sitting behind this mic at WICC, and I will have no problem telling you that, yeah, I screwed this one up. I was wrong. But in an election year, in a state where legislative races can be won and lost by a couple of hundred votes, especially state house races, Senate races, there's only 36 seats, so you're dealing with roughly 100,000 constituents, but it has happened. But, we're in a situation here now where you have 151 House members that are up for re-election next year. Remember, the even years, usually there's no real testy kind of controversial stuff taken affront by the General Assembly, because they all, Democrat or Republican, 151 of the House, 36 in the Senate, they got to get reelected in November of the even years. So now they're promising to do something here. Maybe they will. I hope they will. But don't be surprised And again, if I am wrong on this, I will be the first to admit it and give the people credit in Hartford where credit is due. But don't be surprised if we get into the new legislative session, which I think kicks off in the second week of January, if I'm not true. Forgive me, I don't have the exact day. But don't be surprised if they get there and they say, well, we're going to study this more. Because think about it. Think about what just happened. There was enough pressure by people in several businesses, the fuel, oil, and gasoline station people. Hey, they have a seat at the table. We've talked to Chris Herb on this program. Chris has been on a bunch of other programs around the state. There was pressure on social media, talk radio, people that do shows like this, on like I do here on various other stations. They applied pressure too, and that's how it works. You can fight City Hall on some things, not a lot of things, not everything, but you can. So you explain to me, would you be in any way, shape, or form surprised if the majority in Hartford says, well, no, let's have a study group on this? Because, look, I'm all for some sort of regulation if it is logical, if some sort of targeted phase out here, and again, I guess we have to abide by either California's law or the federal standards. Well, now they're saying maybe we should vote and just dial it back to the federal standards here. Or maybe we should do, we mentioned this yesterday, you know, maybe we should do what some other states are doing or are intending on doing and do this incrementally. Say every 2 or 3 years, we've got to step up and say, okay, this target is here, but we have to make sure the infrastructure is being built out properly. And that's the big thing. Again, even in all this discussion I'm seeing yesterday, last night, into today, nobody is getting real specific about, hey, how are we going to handle this transition? Whether it's forced on us or not, a transition that's going to affect millions of people who may not want to be affected by this. Again, I can't stress enough, there are people who love their electric vehicles. I'm not concerned with them. They made a free choice. The market indicated that that choice to them, in their mind, in their thinking, and their socioeconomic status, was the right thing to do. God bless you. I don't care if you have 10 EVs and you charge them at home or charge them wherever. That's not the point. The point is you made a free and conscious decision here. The question becomes, at what point does the state or the city or town or any governmental agency do something like this and not do it with a vote of the people that we sent to Hartford, Democrat and Republican? That's what they're afraid of here. They'll never say it. The Democratic majority in Hartford, they will never say it out loud. But I can tell you the levels of agita that they must be feeling last week and early this week and yesterday and today for two well-known Democrats to back out of this, pretty much saying, well, you know, it's, you know, for Joan Hartley, I guess it was a budgetary thing or a money thing or a plan thing. And for Kathy Austin, it was with her constituents out there, the farmers. Although I did read where Joan Hartley says she was concerned about how it would impact, you know, an urban area like Waterbury, where she said the average family income is only $42,000. And she's right. She's right. But, man, I got to tell you, you just know that the majority leadership in Hartford, they are gnashing their teeth now. Why? Because they have to go on the record, yay or nay on this. And that's the proper thing. And coming up in about 30 minutes, we will talk to a local leader who was reelected on a unique, I guess what you would term a third party line here in the state, and why she chose to apparently walk away from the party she had been elected under and to what is now called the Forward Party. We'll talk to her coming up in about 30 minutes, so you're going to want to be around for that fascinating topic. Also equally fascinating is we do one more segment here on the State Regulations Review Committee, not taking a full vote on this. They were supposed to do it yesterday. If it's split 7 Republicans and 7 Democrats, no on the Republican side, yes on the Democratic side, it would have sent the regulation into effect, banning gasoline-powered vehicle sales by 2035 in the state. It was withdrawn, though, when at least 2 Democrats were going to cross the aisle and vote no with the 7 Republicans. One of the 7 Republicans who was prepared to vote no on this, Republican State Senate member Paul Ciccarella, Hamden, Wallingford, North Haven. Hey, Paul, it's Paul Pacelli here again. How are you?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm good, Paul. Paul, it looks like here, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, what you're hearing inside, whatever. It looks like, Paul, there was enough pressure from people. The buzz was set forth to enough people across the aisle, your compatriots across the aisle, on the committee to say, hey, time out on this. We don't like some aspects of this. Talk about internally what was going on here.
Absolutely. So as soon as we realized these regulations were kind of outside of what the original legislation in 2002 was intending to accomplish and the demand that this would put on our Connecticut residents, we started to ask questions. And once we were getting these answers, we brought those additional questions too deep, and we could not get answers, solid answers that would alleviate the concerns that we had. And as we talked to our members of the Regs Review on the other side, I think that they also had the same questions. And as we started to hold press conferences in town halls, I think it brought light to this issue. And thank God we did that, because if we did not really understand what this legislation or regulation would do and didn't make a big stink about it, this very well could have passed today. And really, we would have seen some real big problems starting as early as 3 years from now.
Yeah, because the phase out, Paul, if I read parts of the bill correctly, they keep saying 2035, but some of this was supposed to start as soon as what, 2026 or 2027, right?
Yes, 2027, and that's part of the light duty trucks, which there's 2 separate regulations, and that is a real concern, and one of the larger concerns in this whole proposed regulation. 2027, they're saying no more new sales of buses, tractor trailers, and larger vehicles that conduct business and transport goods every single day. And as we were starting to hear from some of these trucking industries, at the end of the day, the cost of the material and goods that they're moving from point A to point B are going to go up astronomically. And all that's going to do is just in turn put the cost back on the Connecticut residents that are already feeling, the high cost of living here in Connecticut. Not only that, without proper planning of where these charging stations would be, some of these larger vehicles can only go up to 100 miles without a charge and have to have at least 6 hours to fully charge that. And when they were giving the mathematical breakdown of what a truck's able to do now and what it would be able to do with the battery, it was literally crazy to the point where people were going to leave Connecticut and go do business in other states because this would really put them out of business or make it extremely expensive to conduct business here. And again, that's as early as 2027.
Yeah, and Paul, I was reading stuff yesterday, and I've read stuff about this in the lead up to the no vote or not having the vote today. From electric industry people, Eversource, UI, the actual engineers, Paul, who deal with the gigawatts and the megawatts and the terawatts and the watts, many of them saying, hey, if even by 2035, that does not give us enough time to lay out a plan or to implement a plan to build out this massive expansion of the power grid that would be necessary here.
You're 100% correct. And again, if we didn't bring this to light, we wouldn't have been able to get those responses from these people that are very smart and understand what our infrastructure can support right now. And clearly, we're nowhere near where we need to be. And, you know, that is a huge, huge concern of ours, is when we're trying to implement a good idea and there's good intentions, right? The environment is important. Clean air is important. But you cannot just implement something and not understand what the plan is and what costs are going to be associated with that. Not to mention, it's simply not even right now, as you were saying, doable. We don't even have the workforce. We're in a shortage of electricians now as we speak.
Yeah.
And we see Massachusetts, there was just an article not too long ago, that they're also finding there's no workforce to do what they're trying to do for their infrastructure.
Mm.
So, again, there was too many unanswered questions. And in the governor's press conference today at 1:30, we saw that. And they admitted that there was definitely a lot of unanswered questions and concerns that they also shared. And I just think it's great that we were able to stop this and now get this into the legislature. So this is a regs review committee. What was before the regs review committee was very serious policy change, and that needs to happen in the legislature on the floor with the full process, the public hearings, and being able to have a debate, and more importantly, for people who send their representatives to the Capitol, the ability to hold them accountable for their vote. That is also something that's very, very important here in this whole process.
Yeah, and Paul, let's go to the elephant in the room here, and the guest is State Senator Paul Ciccarelli joining us right now. He was one of the seven Republican no's on the Regulation Review Committee. The vote did not happen today, but at least two Democrats were going to side with Republicans, so the governor pulled it. So, Paul, you know, once the holidays are done, January comes, you guys and gals, Democrat and Republicans, House and Senate, are back in session. Now, the governor has said, and you talked about a news conference earlier today, I'm reading something about that, the governor's saying, well, he's going to lean on Democrats to do something here and put that into law. Okay, Paul, there's an election in 2024. Without getting too specific, what do you think the appetite, Paul, is going to be from your compatriots on the other side of the aisle there in the House and Senate to do something like this, Paul, in an election year? And this is going to be something now that's followed, you know, extremely, extremely closely. Are we going to just have another committee or another study here, Paul, or do you think we might actually have a hard vote on some of this stuff or not?
Well, I think that's definitely a concern of some of the members of the other side. You know, this is something that's now on our constituents' radar. So I do believe that that may have a role in how this plays out. But I think that that's actually a very good opportunity for the constituents to voice their concerns. And again, we don't want to make this about politics. All too often, very important legislation is made political, and then bad legislation is created. And there is so many unintended negative consequences.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this to be political. I think that there's conversations that need to happen. And we've already been caucusing. You know, Senate and House Republicans have had numerous caucuses to come up with ideas and figure out ways to achieve this goal of lowering our emissions. And that's what needs to happen. And I hope that we can do that in a bipartisan fashion. And I think with, you know, your original question about people paying attention and coming into, an election year, I think that's only going to help that sense of bipartisanship and coming up with very reasonable and common sense ideas to get to where we all want to be at the end of the day, which is cleaner air, right? No one's saying we don't want that. We just need to do it responsibly.
And, you know, Paul, finally, I started the show a couple of hours ago at 2 o'clock, and some of my opening remarks were, you know, Paul, in the age now of talk radio and the internet and social media, I think, Paul, sometimes that old phrase of you can't fight City Hall is not true anymore. It doesn't work all the time, but this is not 30, 40, 50 years ago when this might have been done with a lot of your constituents not knowing what's going on here. Enough people spoke up, enough folks who influence people spoke up, and we didn't kill this thing. It's not going to be killed completely, but at least we got a time out on this to make sure we go forward here with a little common sense. So maybe you can fight City Hall. I don't know.
Well, again, there was a lot of hard work from a lot of stakeholders, a lot of staff, both in the House and Senate Republicans, that were able to get the research. So when we ask these questions to, you know, the bureaucrats that are putting this forward and ask, again, questions that our industry leaders and constituents had, you know, without that hard work and a, you know, willingness for people like yourself to get that message out there, this wouldn't happen. And this should happen more often with other legislation that we have that gets brought before us that may have a very negative consequence to Connecticut residents, but sometimes go overlooked. So I think you're right that this is a great example of how we could get a message out there and then really understand what the effect of legislation could be. And again, listen to the Connecticut residents. I really hope we do that more often with other things that come before us at the Capitol that will affect our Connecticut residents so much as this regulation would have.
All right. Republican State Senate member Paul Ciccarella, District 34, Wallingford, North Haven primarily. Paul, thanks. We'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There you go, Paul Ciccarella here. All right, let's shift gears here. Have you heard of the Forward Party? Yes, forward isn't forward, backward, left, right. The Forward Party. We had a local leader reelected to a third term in office, but this time she ran under the Forward Party. We welcome the first select woman of Stonington, Danielle Cheesebro, to the program. Danielle, hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Tell us about the Forward Party. Now, your first couple of wins in Stonington were not with the Forward Party, correct? But you were running on this line this time. Tell us how that came about.
Thank you so much. I'd love to. So I've always been affiliated, and so this was my third term running, and this time the Democrats, you know, found a Democratic candidate and the Republicans had a Republican candidate, which was, you know, healthy part of democracy. And I just don't feel like I belong in either party, and I never have. So I decided that I was going to petition on and still run to keep my job. And the Forward Party really just appealed to me as a vehicle for doing that. I had been involved with SAM, the Serve America Movement.
Sure.
In years past, and they merged two summers ago with Forward. So I had been, you know, loosely involved with them. And then this just felt like the right moment and the right opportunity to kind of help also, while running for local office, shine a spotlight on, I think, some of the great work Forward's trying to do around the country.
So why do that, Danielle, and not just run independent, unaffiliated? Did you want to have some banner you were carrying with you, but just not a D or an R? Is that what it came down to?
I think it really came down to it. I believe in what Forward is trying to do around the country, and it's really focused on local and statewide elections and trying to give people another option. I can speak from personal experience. It's very hard to get involved, even to run. I started with the Board of Finance in our town. But even people looking to run for Board of Ed, Board of Finance, you get a lot of pressure to join a party. Mm. Or if you're not in a party in some towns, you just can't run. They won't support you. And it's almost impossible to get elected. Not impossible, but it's very hard to get elected not being part of the major parties, especially if you're new, if you're not an incumbent. So I think what Forward's doing is fantastic. I think if you look around the country, it's something like 70% of local board seats, you know, Board of Selectmen, Town Council, Board of Education, they go uncontested. There's no one running, and there's no competition, and that's not healthy, and that's not getting the, you know, the best people to run for office and then that pipeline to higher office. So I think what they're trying to do to create a way for, you know, I think in Connecticut, about 40% of registered voters aren't in either major party, and we make it really hard for them to get involved at a time where we really need more people to step up.
Yeah, and Danielle, it's funny because, not funny, but in a weird kind of way, what you mentioned, people think, oh, party machinery, you can't, and they think of, you know, State House, State Senate, U.S. House, U.S. Senate, but I've heard for years, and almost 40 years in radio and doing shows like this, you're right, this stuff trickles down to, like, you know, the library committee, you know, like the trash committee. And maybe this is what our founding fathers really worried about, saying, you know, beware of the partisan politics and all this. But you're right, it is very cliquish, as I've heard, even at the lowest possible level.
It is, and it's just, I think also without, you know, ranked choice voting, which is something Forward is, you know, promoting around the country, as are, you know, other groups and entities, and even, you know, we've been really fortunate, our governor in Connecticut has been supportive of ranked choice voting recently. But without something like ranked choice voting, not being in either major party really does make it impossible, because people don't want to feel like they're throwing their vote away, even if they really like, you know, somebody that's, you know, running not in either party line. They often feel like it's just a wasted vote. And so it doesn't give you a lot of chance. And then again, like we said, it just really limits your pool of people who are even considering running, never mind those who are going to be successful.
Did you have people, Danielle, during the last campaign when you were on the Forward line or carrying the Forward banner, did they come up to you and say, "What are you doing? Like, are you okay? You're not a D or an R,
family,
right? Did that happen?"
Family, friends, everyone, pretty much. They all meant it, I think, very, very well intentioned. I think, you know, they wanted to see me succeed, whether, you know, for, you know, personal reasons or because they liked what I was doing for the town. And in all seriousness, you know, we're very concerned, as was I, that, you know, taking this route wasn't going to end up in a successful place. But in the end, it just felt like it was, you know, it matters a lot. You know, running for local office matters. You impact everyday life. But I really think what Forward's trying to do around the country is bigger than one town or one state. And hopefully more and more people will kind of step up and do this and get involved. And then I think that's how you, you know, you build change. And I think one thing most people seem to agree on is what's happening right now, especially at the national level, mm-hmm. isn't working. So, you know, we need some changes.
Does it frustrate you, Danielle? Because it frustrates the heck out of me when everybody is yelling, we need more choices, more choices. Yet, when the Forward Party comes up, or the SAM Party that was previously, that I talked to people about previously, or nationally, a third way or no labels. But if we vote for a third party person, Danielle, it's only going to let the other person win. I mean, that's maddening. Do you want choice or not? Right?
It is. It is a little bit maddening, but I also understand it. And I think that's why, you know, Forward, and some, you know, like we said, some similar organizations, you know, are trying to go about this very smartly. And one of the key governance changes that we're all seeking is ranked choice voting. So I think, you know, we've seen it work in Maine and in Alaska and in, you know, numerous other kind of cities and, you know, smaller areas. But it just makes a lot of sense. And it's giving people more choices. It's instant. It's quick. You know, it. I just don't know why people would fight it, except that, you know, people don't want to lose the power they already have. So we're hoping that in Connecticut, people will kind of recognize that and call on their, you know, state officials to hopefully, you know, do what's right and support a ranked choice voting bill. And we could join some other states in trying to push for that change.
All right. The website, you want to check it out, ctforwardparty.com. Run it all together, ctforwardparty.com, and a successful Forward Party candidate last time around, the first selectman of the town of Stonington, Danielle Cheesebro. Danielle, thanks. Congratulations. Good luck. And don't be a stranger. You have my number. So anything happens, let me know.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great rest of the day.
Appreciate it. Thank you. So there you go. All right. So the Serve America movement, the SAM Party, which we used to talk about, with the with a bunch of people around the state, including the late Oz Griebel, has now kind of morphed and merged into the Forward Party. I love having third party people on, because it's just, it's fascinating to me, people that have been lifelong Democrats or lifelong Republicans or lifelong independents, they want a home, but they just don't like the homes they've had or have been offered. All right, we'll get back to open phones momentarily, and when we do, it's at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We haven't spoken to this guest in a while because of holidays and time off and all that. Megan Portfolio joins us every Tuesday in the 5:15 segment here. She blogs at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy with the Hartford Portfolio. Megan, hi, it's Paul. How are you?
Oh, so much better now. It's been a tough 2 weeks without you.
Well, you know, yeah, that's the effect I have on people. I just, I'm trying to figure it out. So, Megan, your latest column here, the Yankee Institute, now that we've gotten by, let's see, a weird EV policy, now that we've waded through a bunch of other things here, now we're talking about another nickel and dime sort of thing that's happening to people here, and tied into recycling. So what should people know about this?
Well, January 1st, they're increasing the bottle deposit to 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So all of you guys that have been hoarding your cans, wait till January 1st to turn them in. Just kidding.
Okay. I stopped doing that years ago. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, anyway, so I was interested in this because California has been having serious issues with, they call it cross-border redemption,
mm-hmm.
where these fraudsters, they're channeling like Kramer and Newman from that Seinfeld episode when they traveled from New York to Michigan to get the extra 5 cents. They failed at it, but these fraudsters out on the West Coast, they are making bank. Some of them are making millions of dollars by literally loading up empties across the border in non-redemption states and then bringing it to California to redeem, and they're making millions of dollars. So I was interested to see what Connecticut was planning on doing about it, because if it's happening there, it's going to happen here. And so I sat through this bottle bill meeting last week, and we don't even really have any laws against it.
Oh, my God. You actually sit through this stuff. Oh, my God.
Oh, no, this is a good one, because I was already like, oh, my God, I already know what my headline's going to be.
All right.
Well, anyway, so, yeah, so Connecticut's one of three states that are going to have a 10-cent deposit. Okay. Oregon and Michigan also have one. But what I didn't realize is we're only one of 10 states that even actually has a bottle deposit. I've lived in New England my whole life, and I just assume this is just a way of life, you know, another instance of the government nickel and diming me, but there's only 10 states that do that. And so I dug in a little bit more, and the return rate is only like 44%. So people are either tossing them out the window or hopefully putting them in their blue bins.
I can believe that. Yeah, I would have guessed, if you would have asked me, I would have said 50-50. Now, I plead guilt to this because when I have, well, I don't throw them away. I live in a high-rise condo, so at the end of our hallways, we have the recycle bins there. So, all right, give it to the condo association so they can trim the hedges. Okay, so the and I drink a lot of soda, trust me. So the fear is now, Megan, in this, that there are going to be people going cross-border here to take advantage of the 10-cent deposit return rate that's coming up in January?
Yeah, because we're the only state that has like that flat 10-cent fee in, mm-hmm. in the whole New England area. So there, you know, there's concerns that there's going to be Massachusetts. Geez, did I fail geography? Massachusetts, New York, and Rhode Island. And Rhode Island doesn't even have a bottle deposit. So, and actually the current scam with the Rhode Islanders is they just stockpile them and they bring them over the border, cash them in. And I mean, it's kind of like they call it a cottage business.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, they're just bringing them over here. The state deep runs this whole program, and they can't tell us, you know, how many, you know, cans are being redeemed illegally here. Currently, they definitely can't figure it out going forward. So just for example, Oregon and Michigan, who both have the 10-cent deposit, they have laws on the books.
Yeah.
And they're still losing $10 million a year.
Wow. So there, I guess, boy, I never thought of this. So there's no way. So, okay, I look at a can and it says 10 cent or 5 cent Connecticut deposit going up to 10. But yeah, so I guess if the other cans don't have that and you put them into one of those recycling machines or the bottles, like, they're not scanning, or we're not scanning those for a barcode if they come from out of state. Is that what you're saying?
They'll scan it, and it's not so much the consumers like you and I that, well, I always redeem my cans because if I don't, the money stays in the general fund, and, well, they get enough of my money, so I want my 5 cents back.
Okay.
But it's mostly, it's going to be in California, they have box trucks, and they figure it's for every pound of cans, it's 30 cans. So you literally pile in cans in these box trucks and bring them over the border and just redeem them at the redemption centers. You just dump them off. And if there's no oversight, I mean, there's nothing, and we don't have any laws on the books. So it's like typical fashion with Deep. They like half do the job. So yeah, great. Now we have this 10 cent deposit because people aren't returning enough cans. But on the other hand, you don't put any laws on the books to prevent people coming over here and literally robbing our state.
Now, at that ultra exciting and fascinating hearing you said that you sat in on or watched or whatever with the bottle bill, was this brought up at all? Did anybody say, hey, if we go higher now, starting on January 1 with 10 cents a container, this is going to be a problem? Is anybody beside you ringing the bell on this?
Yes. Fortunately, they did bring in someone from California who talked about how they're trying to handle the situation. I mean, they're still losing a lot of money, and the fraud just keeps increasing year after year. But they have cross-agency people looking out for this. They have checkpoints. I mean, something we don't have here, we don't have checkpoints because we're not a border state like California is. So they do have some infrastructure available. But, I mean, they have laws on the books. They have billboards on the major smuggling routes to say, like, hey, this is illegal, so don't be pleading ignorant that you didn't know. They have a tip line, which they say they get a ton of calls on.
Yeah.
So they at least are trying to, you're never going to stop it, but they are trying to, keep as much money as they can. But we don't even have anything like that here. So it's just like open borders in Connecticut. Bring your empties over here until hopefully lawmakers, throw some laws in the
Well, we'll see. Hopefully somebody reads this and does something post January 1, but again, who knows? All right, Megan, thank you. Megan Portfolio, check it out. Check out this story, folks. It's going up to 10 cents a container after January 1, but I never thought of this. We have no safeguards for people coming over the border and just say, hey, look at all this stuff I want to cash in, and basically stealing money. Check out the Hartford Portfolio at theyankeeinstitute.org. Megan, thanks. Good to chat with you. We'll check next week.
All right, sir. Goodbye.
Appreciate it. All right. How about that, folks? Yeah, going up 10 cents a container. Yeah. What'd she say? The return rate is 45%. That's not bad. Do you collect your bottles and do you make them? I'm just too lazy. I know I should. But I sit there and say, oh, whatever. Well, now, it's not like I throw them away again. It's not like I actually throw them away. I should ask our condo board. Now, see, I've never realized this. The money, the 5 cents that I'm too darn lazy to get off my keister. It's one of my father's favorites, too. Get off your keister, kid. So I take a bag or two, maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks. I drink like a can of soda a day at home, or a bottle. Small, not big. I put that at the end of our hallway. We have a little utility room that's got the opening to the garbage chute that goes downstairs. And then there's the recycling bin. The green one is for, what do we do, newspapers in that, cardboard. And the blue one is for cans. See? Now I have to find out, where is all my can recycling money going? Is it going to does it go toward keeping my monthly condo fees now? My association fee? I don't know. All right. How many of you folks actually return your cans and bottles? Chris Williams, do you return up or down? Thumbs up or down? Do you return your cans and bottles? Good. See? I knew there was a reason we hired you for this gig. See that? Chris gets the Williams family gets the money back, and Chris, my producer and news guy, I can officially say now he's a good steward of the environment. See that? as he has a big smile on his face and nods up and down. Yes. All right. 203-333-9422-333-WYCC. Now, I must say, in the few times in my life, which I could probably count on one hand, that I've gone to the recycling center and actually inserted the cans and bottles in the machine, that's enjoyable. There's a certain level of satisfaction you get from watching that machine, you know, just suck it up. The other thing I love doing, and I know it's kind of expensive, but there are those Coinstar machines. Have you seen those? And I know they charge, what, 8 cents or 9 cents on them. I know that. Well, why don't you just sort the coins you have by hand? Yeah, but, you know, every couple of years, I collect all the change I have laying around my condo, and it comes out to 60, 70, 80 bucks. I know. I just come in, empty my pockets, and plop it right down. But it is fun to go to those coin machines, is it not, in your local supermarket? And then you dump all the coins in there, and it's just zing, 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 and you see the thing, you know, go, oh, 80 bucks, 85 bucks, 90 bucks, and then you get, it's all done, and then you get the little voucher there, and it's 80 bucks minus 9 bucks to count it, it's 71 bucks, whatever. And it's always fun at the bottom of that, right, to see what the machine wouldn't take. Oh, it wouldn't take a screw. It wouldn't take a wing nut. No, that's not money. Oh, it didn't take that New York subway token that was in that jar. And those darn Canadian coins, they don't go through either.